You're listening to the Canadian Country Music Podcast. Here's your host, Tim Albertson.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Canadian Country Music Podcast. I am your host, Tim Albertson, and I am super excited you are here for the very first episode. This podcast is for everybody, fans and musicians, anybody who is into Canadian country music. This podcast is for you. We're going to deal with the news, some upcoming songs and singles coming out, as well as having in-depth interviews with Canadian country artists and get behind the scenes and behind the stage, if you will, of their music. So without further ado, here comes the news. So we have some new releases coming out this week, and these songs have been added to the Soundcheck Entertainment. Shout out Soundcheck! Canadian country music playlist. So here we go. The Boys Are Back At It by the Roadhammers. Die to Go Home by Brett Kissel. Free, Free, Free by Renegade Station. Good Boy, Brian John Hardwood. Broken Lonely, the unplugged version by Dustin Bird. Happy After You, The Heels. Summertime High, Brandon Z. Good Day by Dan Washburn. Don't Mind If I Do by David James. Drive Me Home, Emily Clare. Annie, Kyle McKerney. Myself Soon, Maddie Leon. Moonshine, Wicklin versus Wicklin. Making Good Time, Martin Starzy Band. Empty Pockets, Jessica Servier. King of Hearts, Megan Friedman. And She's My Whiskey by Wichita. Headlines in Canadian country music news this week. Eric Church has announced that he has plans on doing a full 55-city concert tour, including stops in Calgary, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Toronto, Ottawa, and Saskatoon. These will not be drive-in concerts, though, as Eric plans to bring back stadium tours. Now, for him to get ready for this tour, he has been vaccinated for COVID and is imploring others to follow suit. One thing I can say is definitely welcome back, baby! The American Country Music Awards are being held on Sunday, April 18th on CBS, but some awards have already been given out. Jimmy Allen was presented his award for New Male Artist of the Year, while Gabby Barrett took home New Female Vocalist of the Year. You can catch all the winners on CBS April 18th. And lastly, the Country Music Association of Ontario has announced their nominees for this year's awards happening May 30th at Ancaster Fairgrounds. Robin Ortolini heads up with 5 nominations this year for her track F-150. Such an amazing tune. She's nominated for Single of the Year, Album of the Year, Songwriter of the Year, Rising Star of the Year, and Female Artist of the Year. Other nominations include Tim Hicks and Buck 20, as well as Aaron Allen, last year's Rising Star winner. For a full list of nominations, including Fan Choice Award, head on over to cmaontario.ca and click the March newsletter. And that's the news making headlines this week. So on today's podcast, the very first podcast, we're going to take a look at me and my music career so far. What's led me to these moments in my career, why I would even want to create a podcast, and why you should even want to listen to it. First and foremost, this podcast was made for both fans and artists. I wanted to peel back the curtain and bring you all into the world of music. Behind the scenes, behind the stage, if you will, we're going to talk about before, during, and after music. This podcast will have musicians on each week where we'll discuss everything you would ever want to know in the industry. And if you're a musician wondering how I make the next step in the right direction to further my career, well, hopefully we'll answer some of those questions for you. As the show progresses, we would also love to hear from you. If you have any questions for our artists or myself, please feel free to leave us a comment and find us on our Facebook group, The Canadian Country Podcast. We're even looking into having the ability for fans to call into the podcast live as well. This week, our artist is, well, me. My name's Tim Albertson, and I have been infatuated with music since I was a child. At a young age, I knew I wanted to be a singer. I grew up in a small town of Hurkin, Ontario, population roughly 250 people, maybe. I had watched on TV the award shows and the special concerts. My brother had a Columbia House subscription that I stole and got new music from, as well as our local radio stations from Thunder Bay. We didn't have the big city lights, but we had the small town dreams, and no matter what we were doing, music was always playing for it. As a young child, I spent a bunch of time with my older family members, and in one particular, my grandmother, May. I kind of got the music storm rolling inside of me. I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house, helping her around the house, spending weekends with her in her garden, and no matter what, she was always singing a tune. Old nursery rhymes are hymns for a world sadly forgotten in some aspects, but when she sang them, it was like magic. My grandmother may have had an incredible voice at one point, but now in her 70s, age has set in and into one of these little raspy tones. But when she sang a nursery rhyme to me, it was angelic and I was hooked. So I knew I wanted to sing music, but what kind of music could I sing? Well, where I grew up, we had three stations. You had CFNO Broadcasting in Superior Greenstone, Rock 94 in Thunder Bay, or Kix 105.3 FM, the country station. Rock 94 and CFNO came in on a clear sunny day, but Kix was always there. And I truly believe that's where I became a country artist. My grandmother had told me old fables and nursery rhymes from her time, and now I was hearing new stories with a six string from Jackson to Diffie to Keith, Strait, and even Brooks. It felt perfect for me. I should also mention that my family had an 8-track player, which had some icons of country music world as well, but we really didn't break them all out that often. However, I'm pretty sure my mom still has a collection in her closet. Country music coursed through my veins. When I was a younger boy with a story to tell and a twang to back it up, however, I knew at a young age that in order to make it, you need to adhere to your audience. And at that time, my audience was my teachers and my fellow students. Now, I was a big kid. I wasn't the strongest, I wasn't the fastest, and I was bullied a lot in school, and as an emotional kid, that can and still does take a toll on me. How could I ever get up on stage in front of anyone? Me being told I wasn't perfect enough, even for a society I grew up in of 250 people. How would I get up enough courage to take that stage? Luckily, I had a close family member that hung out with me all the time and encouraged me to do it. Then in 1998, a movie came out with an incredible title song to it. The movie was Titanic. The song was My Heart Will Go On. And the stage was then beginning to take shape. Now, remember, I was 8 years old. My voice hadn't fully developed quite yet, so I could still hit those high notes and falsettos with ease. I practiced at home, alone, hidden away until auditions were held. My classroom was across the hall from the gym where auditions were, and because I didn't know how to get a backtrack, I sang the song a cappella. 4 minutes later, I got off the stage, was told I'd be in the show, and then I got back to the class, and what happened next was the fuel that started it all for me. My classmates were standing up clapping for me, some of them even shocked. How can you sing like that? Where did you get a mouth like that with those? Did you just mouth the words? Was that even you? For the rest of the day, I felt like a rock star at that age. The day came with the show, and I was even more confident than ever when I hit the stage, nailed the song with my family, including my grandma in the audience. I never got to tell her she was my muse, but I'm sure she knew it. When high school started, I went back into my shell for a while. I was still the bigger kid, and a few people knew I could sing, but I was so nervous to get up in front of everyone even more because of all the peers. To be so vulnerable on stage, it wasn't until I was sitting in computer class with my headphones on one day that I got lost in a Diamond Rio song and started bailing it out without even knowing it. One more day was over, and I opened my eyes, and the class was silent. I mean, a pin drop could have fallen on the moon, and you would have heard it. From there, the word got out that I was asked to sing at high school assemblies and concerts, and I became the country music singer. They even did skits about me during winter assemblies, which I thought was amazing. The fact that I was a part of somebody else's performance meant I was doing something right. Now, also in high school, I was also brought into a new world of friends and other singers, and one thing that I didn't even think of was singing lessons. In my head, I knew how to sing, and lessons were for people who wanted to but didn't really know how to. So at first, I was a little off on the idea until I heard my singing teacher, Denise Krawcheck, hit her first note. Now, I was going through changes in my voice and needed guidance, so I begged my mom to get me singing lessons with her. And in her hometown of Red Rock, Ontario at the time, I started to hone into my craft. Denise used to tell me I remind her of a young Vince Gill, and we worked hard in recitals and competitions with various genres from pop to jazz and country music. And I think she could tell that country was my forte. Competitions against other singers in her group fueled my drive to be at the top at that young age. American Idol was just starting to peak. Canadian Idol was also beginning to rise. So the high schools in Thunder Bay created High School Idol. Kids in high school singing and competing for money in front of a panel of judges, an open category and an original category. The first year I went in and I made the final 10, but I think I missed out on the final three. I still made it to the finals, so that was absolutely incredible for me. I think one of Denise's singers, Shane Stoles and Isaac Matthews, won the competition in open and original. The next year I came back into the competition, but I focused mainly on the original category with a song I had written called Yesterday. Between the first and second year of the competition, something monumental happened in Nipigon that literally changed the whole world overnight for us. The local paper mill had caught fire and burnt down to the ground. Our towns were built around the pulp industry, and after Red Rocks Mill had shut down, a place where my father and grandfather both worked, Nipigon was the last remaining prime source of income for nearly 15,000 people in the surrounding community. What was even worse is just weeks before the fire, the workers had bought the plant from the company in order to create even more influx into the community. And while I was sitting outside high school that one day, you could see across the bay, Nipigon Mill was fully engulfed, and overnight, the mill was gone. Now, my family didn't really rely on the mill. My father was a long-haul truck driver, and mom worked in the greenhouses, so indirectly, mom's work slowed down a bit, but our family didn't lose all our income like some of our friends. In particular, Jenna, both of her parents worked there, and overnight, the talk about moving became a big discussion. So I wrote a song about that experience, the thought of everything changing, and how you could miss the thought of yesterday when everything was still perfect. I took the song with my friend Bryce to High School Idol, and we won the competition. Winning meant that we were able to go into a professional studio and record the track, which was my first ever experience in a studio. Somewhere on a backroad CD, there is that track. I have since lost my copy, but that's when I really got a full love for not only the stage, but the process of music. By the way, Backroads was a band that I formed with Bryce and our friends Jared and Jordan. It kind of all came from that High School Idol performance. The band was around for a few years. We played a few shows in Thunder Bay, which exposed me to a live music community. But we broke up and they formed another group, and I went on, did my own solo for a while, then joined a group called Mackenzie Heights. If you really want, you can find some of that stuff still on YouTube and SoundCloud and whatnot. But even in those bands, which were mainly pop and rock bands, they all told me that I had too much twang in my voice and I really needed to work hard to get those type of vocals the band was looking for. After all the bands were said and done, I settled on where I knew I belonged, which was country music. While playing shows in Thunder Bay under the bands, I met a few amazing people, promoters, venue owners, bands, and musicians, and kind of had the thought that if they were successful, what they were doing was working, and if I listened well enough, I could incorporate what they were doing in my own work. Now, a local promoter had just left the scene, leaving a big hole to fill. And when the opportunity came, I became a concert promoter in Thunder Bay. I did local fundraisers, tour acts, coffee houses, and even further began to interview some of the members of the groups coming through the city, both from my shows and other people's shows. I needed to know how they could go from a dream to reality, and how I knew that being in the middle of nowhere, Ontario, Canada, I would need to learn everything I could because those contacts were only in town for one night. After promoting shows for about 7 years, I hung up my gloves, so to speak, and focused on more on work and started my time working at Black Pirates Pub, one of the venues I used to promote at. It's from there that I met a lot of people from Thunder Bay, and they may not have known it, but they were always being interviewed. Some big name music people in the city I was now able to call friends, and when a show would pop up, I felt more comfortable to kind of beg to play. That's where my first big time show with a major artist in the country career began. The venue was The Outpost, and the artist was my favorite group in all of country music, Doc Walker. I had heard on radio that Doc Walker was playing at The Outpost, and luckily one of my friends, Amy, had been working as the manager at that time. Bingo! I messaged her up and said that that's awesome that Doc Walker is playing at the Outpost. Country music is so big with the university crowd, and Doc Walker are kind of pioneers in the country music world. Never mind the Canadian country music world. So nice score. Now, Amy knew I was a country singer, so she would ask me my thoughts on the show and what I think she'd be able to draw on the numbers and the business talk stuff. But in between, I asked if she had an opener in mind, and they didn't. The show wasn't even set to have an opener, so I asked her if she wouldn't mind asking them if I could open. Now I'm a big believer on the worst they could say is no. I will ask anyone for anything, because if you say no, well, at least I tried. So even if they said no, which I honestly expected, at least my name was part of the conversation. I think about a week went by, and then she said, "You're in." So I was excited, and then I thought, damn, I need a band. I feel way more comfortable up on stage with a group of people than myself, because you can feed off each other. And then there's someone else up on the stage that people are looking at too, because sometimes all eyes on you can be extremely nerve-wracking. I picked the best of the best for the group. We practiced inside the old Hillcrest High School, and when the show came, we rocked it. I wish I had a video of that night somewhere, because it was incredible. Doc Walker came on, blew the house down like always, and my very first concert experience opening up for a major country artist was now complete. Not only a country artist, but my favorite group of all time. The pinnacle right at the beginning. As soon as that show was over, I went and recorded an EP called Nothing Beats Home. The title track was written by me, but the other three tracks were written and produced by a man named Jermaine Brunet from Sudbury. Writing a song is easy. A guitar, a pen and paper, and a song kind of forms. Getting a quality studio, other musicians, instruments recorded, then mixed together, and then mastered is a lot of money. There are grants for musicians, but anyone that knows me knows I can't write to save my life, and the paperwork from grants might as well be written in Sanskrit for me. When the idea of having a song already recorded in Nashville and all I needed to do was record my vocals in a studio, the green light went off in my head. We recorded Your Heart Will Dance Again, which was a songwriting competition award winner for Jermaine. And then we did Crazy Beautiful, which is still one of my favorites to play. And he even wrote a song for me called Moonlight Beach, which we recorded as well. The release went digital online through a company called CD Baby, and Nothing Beats Home hit 70,000 plays on SoundCloud, which I was blown away with. Now, I know a lot of those plays are blown up because my high school art teacher, Colleen Rose, what's up, Mrs. Rose? did an art project with her class of a music video for the song, and they used SoundCloud to listen to it. But still, 70,000 plays was amazing. I kind of rode that EP wave for a few years, kind of felt like it wore out, and it wasn't like I was trying to make new music. I was just in a severe writer's block, and everything that I was thinking of came with the instant thought, no, that's not good enough. And then I would scrap that idea completely and start from scratch every single time. Now, I shouldn't say that I couldn't write songs. Of course, Yesterday was mine, and so was Nothing Beats Home, as well as a song I wrote for my grandmother's funeral called Sketched. But I was stuck in a rut, and I didn't think that even though I could write a song, how could I even get it recorded without spending thousands of dollars that I did not have and could not get? So I started searching, and I found another company where they allow you to purchase the rights of the music that has been recorded, again, professionally. And from there, I found my single Closure, about a guy trying to help a heartbroken woman see that all men are not the same. This song was written by Betsy Walter and Maxfield Camp. Max is actually a part of the Glee project on Broadway. Yes, that's right, Broadway. I released that song, and soon after, I was on to the next gem, Looking for a Road, which was written by Chris Farron, who co-wrote Jesus Take the Wheel. And lastly, my newest single, A Bar Like This by Justin Robert Bush, who you've probably heard some of his songs on Shameless and Chicago Med. So not only was I getting amazing quality songs, they were from award-winning songwriters. In the music industry, I knew that if I wanted to have quality songs, they had to compete with Brett Kissel and Gord Bamford. If it sounded like it was from my basement, it wouldn't even see the light of day. So for less money, I could bring out quality material. So Closure had released, and a new venue was now seeing the value of country music in Thunder Bay. NV Music Hall had announced that Gord Bamford would be coming to Thunder Bay and Jade Eagleson and JoJo Mason. As a fan, I was excited for this show. JoJo was running off his second hit single. Jade was running off his first big hit. And Gord Bamford, well, what can I say more about Gord Bamford that hasn't already been said? Another icon in our industry and a huge resume builder. I sent over my message to Envy Nightclub just like that I did with the Outpost. They loved my sound, and the request was sent off to Gordon, his team, and Invictus Entertainment. Shout out Jim Crossman! I got the go-ahead for the show, and now it was time to get to work. The show was selling out fast, and VIP sold out, I think, in about a week. So I knew my A-game had to be at an A-plus level. The day of the show came, my family and friends were front row center, and the show was out of this world incredible. Because I did so well with promo and my presence and reception, they loved me. As an opener, it's your job to bring energy to the show, which can be pretty difficult for a guy with an acoustic guitar in front of a group of 2,500 people plus. But I took some hit covers, added in some originals, and by the end of the set, the crowd seemed ready for Jade, JoJo, and Gord. Shortly after that show, Aaron Perchett was announced, and instead of asking this time, I was asked, which I obviously said yes to. These shows were not paid gigs, but they were all for exposure, which I was getting some great exposure with, as well as the local radio even did an interview with me on live on air. Aaron, Kira, and David James were incredible, and to meet them and interact with them even briefly, all in different aspects of their careers, was amazing. Now, some sad news in between an awesome time. Between Aaron Perchett's show and Tebe's show, I went through the loss of my dad. Now, I had just done two big concerts and was set to release Looking for a Road, and Tebe was set to be announced too for me, and I was at the top of the world for me, anyways. The day after my 30th birthday, my family got the news that my dad had suffered a heart attack while working, and he was gone. Dad was everything to me, my idol, my coach. I was a volunteer firefighter just like him, and that's where I thought we really connected a lot. I collapsed. I fell apart. I didn't show it, but inside it was all gone. I couldn't do the firefighting thing for a bit. I stepped away from music where I was set to headline a local festival. I just didn't want to and couldn't even think of doing it. If it wasn't for my girlfriend and the mother of my kids, Jen, I don't know if I would have even continued. And if I did, it would have taken a hell of a lot longer than it has now. She's been my rock through it all, and we decided that Looking for a Road's release would be kind of a tribute to him. It was the last song he heard with me working on it. And because the song is the title track of ESPN's Dale Earnhardt biography, which, us being huge NASCAR fans, we were both excited for the song. So we released it, did the Tebe show, and then COVID hit. Now, COVID came at the worst time for me. I was working on Summer in the Parks in Thunder Bay, as well as the first country in the Bay with Toby Keith as the headliner for another big concert. And it was shut down almost overnight. I didn't know as a musician what I should even do. I couldn't do shows, so I decided maybe I'd do some live streams on Facebook and Instagram, and whoever wanted to watch could. It wouldn't be nearly as amazing as a concert, but at least I was still playing. On one of my live sets, somebody came in and was like, "Hey man, you should play on Barry's live music show." And from there, I was introduced to the whole new world. Musicians from Southern Ontario, a whole new game changer for me. I felt like I was a veteran in my hometown, but I soon realized that I was very much a rookie in this game. I was soon becoming a fan of independent country music scene and following some of these artists from there, I was opened up to another avenue, new countdowns, online radio, festivals, as well as industry members. Now I was using social media as a tool to meet, follow, focus, and take everything that I was seeing and learning from others and put into action. Everything that has come so far is all from putting foot to ass and spending countless hours of working and studying and learning. I'm still extremely new to this industry, and remember, I have been singing for 23 years now. That's why I wanted to create this podcast, because just like me, others are out there just getting their feet wet, or maybe you're listening and you have a few hits under your belt, you can never stop learning. Some things I've heard from musicians have been so out of the park insane, but it worked. Things you could never think of worked. And maybe, just maybe, something you learn here from this podcast will work for you. So if you're still listening, thank you all so much for joining this journey with me. Next week, we have an amazing female country artist by the name of Susie Corey. Susie and myself recently connected, although since COVID, I have been following her a lot and her career has taken off. As weird as it may be, 2020 could have been the best year of her life. And next week, we are going to be discussing why. So until next week, take care of each other, and I will see you guys then.